Welcome to Manitoba Moments, Discussions in Physiotherapy. The College of Physiotherapists of Manitoba regulates the practice of physiotherapy in Manitoba. Our mission is to ensure that the public receives safe, competent physiotherapy care from qualified physiotherapists. This podcast will address the topics pertinent to physiotherapists practicing in Manitoba, based on our legislation and standards of practice.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the College of Physiotherapists of Manitoba podcast. My name is Jacinta Dope, and I'm a second-year Master's of Physical Therapy student at the University of Manitoba. I'm here with my fellow second-year Master's of Physical Therapy student, Chris Seo, and today we're going to be discussing the topic of communication and professionalism in the world of physiotherapy.
Let's first start with talking about what it means to be a professional as a physiotherapist. According to the College of Physiotherapists of Manitoba, or CPM, being a professional physiotherapist means having the ability to maintain professional boundaries that honor and respect the therapeutic relationship with clients.
That's interesting that you mentioned professional boundaries, Chris, because that ties us into the second half of our segment today, which is communication. Today we want to discuss the different forms of communication physiotherapists use with their clients, and if these forms fit into the definition of professionalism by maintaining professional boundaries.
Okay, but first, let's dive into why it is so important to be professional. There's an article by Marta Mianakis et al. That explains this well. They explain that an individual physiotherapist's behavior brings attention to the profession as a whole. We as physiotherapists are trusted by our clients to act in the best interest of the public, and any unprofessional behavior by even just one individual can break that trust and tarnish the name of physiotherapists.
I agree with that totally, Chris. Let's talk about an example where a prominent professional did not display this behavior.
There's actually a prominent case occurring in the media right now that perfectly sums up the points we've made so far. The Jordan Peterson case. Although not a physiotherapy example, is a prime example of how an individual can get into hot water when it comes to tarnishing the reputation of their profession.
Dr. Jordan Peterson is a professor and psychologist who received complaints against him regarding statements he made publicly on social media like Twitter and in podcast episodes. The statements he made were reported to the Inquiries, Complaints, and Reports Committee of the College of Psychologists of Ontario due to their degrading and unprofessional nature. The type of statements he made tended to include topics like political views, racism, transgender discussions, and several others.
The College of Psychologists of Ontario ended up requesting that he undergo a coaching program about professionalism when making public statements, and he attempted a judicial review. The court ended up siding with the college since Peterson identified as a clinical psychologist on all of his social media when making the public statements. The court also came to the conclusion that there is an amount of trust given to Peterson when he presents himself as a clinical psychologist, so he cannot avoid responsibility from the potential harm caused by his public statements.
Dr. Peterson's unprofessional behavior did not stop there, as he has since made further public statements that he still feels he has done nothing wrong and was only exercising his freedom of speech. He even went as far as to mock the coaching program publicly and stated that he would broadcast his training since he had nothing to hide, as he did nothing wrong.
There's a lot to unpack with that case. Let's start by comparing how this situation relates to the CPM Code of Ethics as physiotherapists.
One of the components of the CPM Code of Ethics entails maintaining and enhancing the reputation of our profession and gaining the trust and confidence of the public by treating everyone with dignity and respect throughout any interaction.
I think it's safe to say that in this case, the public statements made by Dr. Peterson may not have followed treating everyone with dignity and respect. It's interesting to think about how even if you think you are off the clock, you can still be held accountable for any unprofessional behavior that doesn't follow a code of ethics, especially if you identify with your profession publicly.
So now that we know a bit more about our code of ethics and what it means to be a professional, let's talk about how a situation like this may have been avoided. I would say that in the future, anyone who is unsure if a behavior is unprofessional should stop and ask themselves a few things. Number one, Does this behavior maintain professional boundaries in order to respect therapeutic relationships? Number 2. How does this behavior reflect upon the profession? Does it enhance or maintain the reputation? Or does it have the potential to tarnish the profession as a whole? And number 3, does the behavior treat everyone with dignity and respect? And if the behavior doesn't align with these questions, it just shouldn't occur in the first place.
I absolutely agree, Jacinta. A big piece of professionalism that ties into this is accountability. If we as healthcare professionals want to enhance the views of our profession, we need to take accountability where it is due and act with integrity so we can all learn from our mistakes. So if we ever find ourselves in a bit of hot water like the case we discussed, it is important to remember that accountability can go a long way in terms of professionalism.
The article by Marty Mianakis et al. Sums up this section of our podcast episode very well. The article highlights the concept that people of power can define what their profession is and therefore define what they will provide to the public. As physiotherapists, it is important to remember that we as individuals impact how our profession is viewed through society's eyes, and it is important not to abuse that power. Personally, I like the thought that our profession is seen as hardworking, caring individuals who treat patients and clients with dignity and respect.
I completely agree. Okay. So we've talked about how being unprofessional can be harmful. Now let's talk about how to stay professional while we practice. Let's discuss professionalism in the context of communication through technology. It's easy to slip up or feel like we're off the clock when we're dealing with aspects of our practice that are not related to face-to-face interactions with patients. Also, many physiotherapy practice settings are using emails and sometimes texts to communicate with patients.
True, I often saw the use of cell phones and emails in different practice settings.
Right? There is evidence that many physiotherapy practice settings use emails to send appointment reminders, confirmations, or other information.
So, if it's such common practice to use email or even text in clinics, I feel like it's important to think about how we maintain professionalism using these methods.
I agree. Let's start with emails.
I don't really see a problem with emails, since most businesses and hospitals use them too.
True, but physiotherapy practices need to meet certain requirements that other businesses may not have to. For example, adhering to the Personal Health Information Act, or FHIA, is a professional and legislative requirement. And since we're dealing with health information, we must consider security risks. We can lose the trust of patients and the public in the events of security breaches or information leaks. Emails can be intercepted or misdirected by others, so it is a good idea to take safety precautions regarding healthcare information security.
So what should I do when sending files? Should I not be sending letters over email?
I think emails are a powerful tool that can help physiotherapists communicate more effectively and provide information, but we must be mindful of privacy legislation prior to using emails for communicating patient health information.
Okay, I can do that. The practice expectations on the CPM's website seemed like a good starting point to think about how to use emails.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else you would want to add about emails?
No, let's move on to texting.
What about?
I believe the biggest concern with professionalism and texting relates to professional boundaries, the informal nature of texting, and most importantly, communicating physiotherapy personal health information.
True. It is easier to be more casual with text for me personally. I think it's because I use texting to contact my friends and family.
Yeah, the problem with text is that we use it readily in casual, informal situations. We use shortened words, abbreviations, and it's very easy to write up a message and send it. So it's easy to send messages that may cross boundaries or appear unprofessional without thinking twice about it.
Plus, we have our phone on us all the time, so we could send a message to the patient at any time.
And boundaries can be blurred very easily if we're communicating with patients outside of work hours in our personal time. How would a 10 p.m. text message be interpreted by a patient, right?
So, can we use text?
I think there is a way to use it while maintaining professionalism. But I think we have to make sure that we follow some guidelines because it's so easy to slip up. 1. Just like everything else we do, the physiotherapist or the clinic must have documented informed consent.
There has been a case of a patient filing a complaint because a physiotherapist texted them without the patient's consent.
Yes, I think text can be a very personal form of communication, and we shouldn't make assumptions that patients will be okay with us texting them. Number two, only send clear, specific information. There's a lot of room for misinterpretation in text because it's often used to deliver shorter messages with less context, and there are no physical or verbal cues to accurately deliver your intent. 3. Refrain from sending possibly unclear, sensitive, or confidential information, like individualized clinical advice. Text could also be taken out of context very easily and lead to a complaint. 4. Consider forms of communication that are less personal. There are platforms specifically designed for client communication. Make sure to weigh the risks and the benefits of using texting over other forms of communication.
Wow, can I text my patients for anything?
Well, I believe it's a feasible option if done with caution. For example, some physiotherapy clinics text their patients with appointment reminders. That's a very clear message with concrete information that's very hard to misinterpret. It helps both the clinic and the patients as long as there is no personal health information shared.
Okay, well, that's definitely something to think about. I'm glad that we talked about these topics because we'll probably be using more and more technology to communicate with our patients in the future.
Yeah, our practice is always changing and evolving, but I think we'll be okay as long as we keep in mind what it means to be a professional and consider our obligations under privacy legislation.
Agreed. Well, that seems like a good point to end on.
Yes, it does. Thank you for our listeners for joining us today on the topic of communication and professionalism in physiotherapy practice.
Thank you.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended as legal advice. For more information, please go to the College of Physiotherapists of Manitoba website or email us at info@manitobaphysio.com.